This week, Darren Lehners tackles the question, what happens when we allow Freemasonry to be broken up into several smaller organizations that demand our time and market themselves as something more or greater than Symbolic Lodge? Is that even appropriate? Then we'll have an all-new Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. Do you remember that time you were asked to deposit something and were unable to? Steve talks about the rite of destitution, its importance, and the lesson it teaches all of us. Finally, we'll draw a tarot card from an apropos deck for this month. Is it time to just take a nap? Maybe. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 535. I want to thank all of our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners for assisting us in bringing this show to all of the listeners all over the world. For the last 11 years almost, if you're curious on how to assist this program, then head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out all the different options. You know, we've also got a shop called The Shop, right? And this is where you can get a producer's pin, you can get Max Heindel's Ancient and Modern Initiation Special Edition, one that I went through myself, and reprinted with an additional biography, as well as the images that were in the text that have been formatted for the size of the book. Now, those are available. Again, you can get it autographed right from me to you. Another great text that you can pick up is The Master's Word. It's a short treatise on the Word, the Light, and the Self. Now, this book was originally published by George Plumer, and Brother John Ruark and I wanted to make sure that the book lived on, so we wrote an introductory chapter as well as a short epilogue that I think many people will enjoy. It's a must-have for Plumer fans or Masonic esotericists, as it were, and you can get that direct from me also if you would like an autographed copy, but I should also mention that these books are both available in Kindle editions, and in print from Amazon as well. I've also got a few copies left of How to Charter a Lodge, and if I sell out of them, I just have to order more and I can get them to you. However, if you'd like them a little bit faster, 2-day prime shipping, of course, right, through Amazon, you can do that too. And all the links to these things are really on the website. We've also got the time-tested and brother-approved It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry, which is a great book that many Grand Lodges have picked up and actually given to their officers as gaining a different perspective on how to accomplish their goals for the year. So all that, again, available on the shop, and all of that comes back to help the program. So thank you very much. Just wanted to give you guys a heads up. We've got a couple events that are happening in the next few months that I'll be doing some speaking. I'll be doing a virtual presentation for Recovery Number 31 in Greenville, South Carolina, on the legend of Adam's Grave. That'll happen on the 21st of March. April 20th, I'll be doing a special keynote address at a table lodge here in Illinois, and the topic is the Worldwide Brotherhood. That'll be for Cary Grove Lodge here in Illinois. And there's a few more. If you're interested, check out the schedule on WCYpodcast.com. Now, let's get into the education this week. We've been dissecting Whither Are We Traveling? A generational look at the text originally put out in 1963 by Dwight L. Smith, which was addressed again by the Knights of the North in their text, A Laudable Pursuit. However, that was almost 15, 20 years ago. So let's see the continued analysis that Darren A. Lehners brings to this text. In this week's segment, Whither Are We Traveling? Part 6. Here we go. As we continue to explore Dwight L. Smith's seminal work, Whither Are We Traveling?, we begin to explore his answers to the 10 questions he posed for self-examination of the state of ancient craft Freemasonry in 1963. The questions he asked are as important and relevant now as they were then. This week, we look at question 5. What can we expect when we have permitted Freemasonry to become subdivided into a score of organizations? Most Worshipful Brother Smith begins this section with a story about when he was younger. He worked for a newspaper and was amused by the power struggle between four churches in a town with a population less than 400 inhabitants. He claims that all four of the churches were of the same denomination and had the same name. He states that each claimed to be the real thing, and the membership of each church was convinced that the others were heretical. He then asks what a newly raised Master Mason must think of our subdivisions, and wonders if they are just as baffling to him as the four churches were to Most Worshipful Brother Smith. He continues his thought, wondering what this new Master Mason must think when he discovers that no less than 70 organizations have attached themselves to Freemasonry, and that the end is not in sight. He wonders what his reaction is when he is solicited as soon as he becomes an entered apprentice. He asks how this Mason must feel when he is referred to as the Blue Lodge Mason, and wonders if this makes him feel inferior, as if he was not complete. Dwight goes on to say that if we are interested in exploring the causes for a decline in membership, interest, and attendance, that we need to look at the subdivisions in Freemasonry. He states, quote, "I stand firm on my conviction that in the United States, we are spreading ourselves so thin that the basic unit, the Ancient Craft Lodge, is the loser. We may not end up killing the goose that laid the golden egg, but certainly we are bleeding her white." He goes on to say that he is a member of many of the subdivisions. He then goes on to state that he is not the only one that is concerned, giving examples from Sir Alfred Robbins, Noah Fry, and lastly, Dr. Thomas S. Roy, who said the below at the Conference of Grand Secretaries in North America in February of 1962, quote, "If we permit the proliferation of Masonry into rites and the 57 varieties of bodies whose membership is dependent upon ours, let us face the fact that the attendance that goes to them belongs to us. There is a sense in which it can be said that their success is our failure. I am not passing judgment on any of them. I am a good member in some of them, and have done my share work in them. But they all must face the fact that they must pour some of their strength back into the symbolic lodge. For any weakness we develop must sooner or later communicate itself to them." End quote. Dwight goes on to state that it isn't a question of loyalty nor any shortcomings in terms of money, benevolences, or good works, as those are not the issues. The issues that have never been faced are, as Most Worshipful Brother states, quote, "One, the weakening of the basic unit of Freemasonry by too great an emphasis on our subdivisions, and two, the unsound premise that the child is more important than the parent. Let's stand before the mirror and take an honest look at ourselves," end quote. He then says, quote, "One, Masonic bodies and dependent organizations are actually competing for the time, the attendance, the interest, the substance, the devotion of Master Masons. I am sick and tired of all the talk about TV and the automobile and bowling leagues and competing influences. It is time we look in our own house to see where the competition comes from. Like the four churches of the same name, each Masonic organization poses as the real thing. Each claims to have that which was lost. Each is the true wrinkle if we want to appear before the world as a big Mason, one with a collection of degrees, exclusive and affluent. My reply to this is, preach, with my hands raised to the sky. Full disclosure, I am also a member of appendant bodies. However, nothing aggravates me more than running into one of my brothers who is no longer showing up at our stated meetings, no longer interested in helping us to make a quorum, to keep our lodge alive, but yet is at every event of, insert appendant body name here. Anytime you bring this up with the brother, you get a plethora of excuses as to why they aren't attending lodge. Now, what Most Worshipful Brother Smith doesn't state, but which I want to reflect on here, is that if the lodge is dysfunctional, I can't really blame the brother. If we are spending all of our time in the stated meeting arguing over bills, repairs, and other mundane items that could be resolved in emails or a quick Zoom call, then shame on us. If we are not attempting any activities that lead to fellowship, like pre- or post-meeting dinners or festive boards or helping the members with self-improvement in the form of Masonic education, then we have only ourselves to blame. Number two, our subdivisions have encouraged the mental attitude that when a Master Mason gains membership in another body, he then and there has outgrown the Ancient Craft Lodge. Several months after I became a Mason, I was solicited by a worker in one of the recognized bodies. But I had mental reservations. Why is it, I asked him, that Masons who belong to the other bodies place such a stress on those affiliations and seem to care so little about their lodge? Just what answer he gave me, I do not remember. Really, it doesn't matter too much, for the question never has been answered to my satisfaction. I held out for about 3 years before I presented my petition. Years later, when I received the degrees in another Masonic body, I overheard past presiding officers say, quote, "Now here in this body you will find the cream of Masonry," end quote. From that day to this, I have resented such artificial class distinction. The newspaper obituary in my files, which states that the deceased, quote, "was a member of 17 organizations, 10 of them Masonic groups," and then proceeds to list everything that could be bought with money, is a case in point. To be a Master Mason was not enough. Actually, that was of little or no importance. And what about the vanishing emblem? What is wrong with the square and compasses? Even Grand Masters have discarded it. Is it no longer a badge of honor? Must something else replace it to set the wearer apart and place him in the aristocracy? A young man of my acquaintance was interested in petitioning for the degrees. He was interested, that is, until a Master Mason gave him the old superiority sales talk. Something like this. "Sure, I'm a member of Brotherly Love Lodge, but only because I have to be. The Blue Lodge, it doesn't mean a thing to me. What I'm after is what gives me the prestige and helps me in my business," end quote. And we wonder why attendance is poor, why interest is lax, and why the membership curve goes downward, end quote. I agree with Most Worshipful Brother Smith. Freemasonry collectively needs to take a good look in the mirror. On the first point, I'm amazed that Brother Smith was able to avoid someone trying to get him to petition to join an appended body for several months. How many of us have experienced a situation where a newly raised Master Mason is circled by members of the appended bodies with petitions in hand after their degree, like a shark might circle its prey? These new Master Masons are nothing more than chum in the water to the brethren who are these sharks. Why do we allow brethren who are so desperate for membership in their appended body to do this on the most important night of this Mason's career? The body is freshly raised, yet we do not allow them to think about the importance of what just occurred to them. Instead, we allow them to be swallowed whole by these vultures. Our grand lodges do no better when they allow men who are raised in their one-day classes to immediately join appendant bodies who have their representative there at the class. These men have not even had any time to reflect on their journey in the Blue Lodge, and yet we now allow them to join other bodies? Yet this activity is done with the blessing of our grand lodges with little to no thought about the impact this might have on their own lodges. I guess as long as they are paying dues, it's fine, right? Never mind the lodges that bring in several members this way, only to have them never attend a stated meeting because they really only wanted to join appendant body X, Y, or Z. These brethren will never see the sacred space of their mother lodge's lodge room, nor understand that it is only due to wanting to become a member of XYZ appendant body. I believe that unless we rethink how appendant bodies recruit members, they will continue to take many brethren that might be assets to their Blue Lodges. For those of you who are probably saying, "Well, Darren, aren't you being a little heavy-handed?" The appendant bodies serve a purpose to continue and build upon what is taught in the Blue Lodge. while this is true, shouldn't we have some requirements for a Master Mason to join other bodies? How is wanting men to experience Blue Lodge a bad thing? There used to be a requirement for Master Masons to either be a 32nd degree Scottish Rite Mason or a Knight Templar in order to join the Shrine. Is it too much to ask that a Freemason be a past Master? Or at least be a Master Mason for a minimum of, say, 5 years before joining any appended body? What does a man gain from advancing in his journey in Freemasonry if he has little to no idea about what the first 3 degrees represent? What does the appended body gain from such a man, other than his degree fees or dues? Most Worshipful Brother Smith illustrates rather succinctly how the failure to guard the West Gate in the Blue Lodge has trickled down to the appended bodies. For those appended bodies that are not invite-only, should there not be a way to screen your incoming candidates? Shouldn't the other brethren in an appended body organization have a say in who else is joining? If there is a man who is looking at Freemasonry as a tool to advance himself or business, then it is apparent that such a man should have never become a member in the first place. Subsequently, we now have such men infiltrating the other bodies. And is it any wonder that now these bodies are suffering as well? When Blue Lodges and appended bodies begin to turn into multi-level marketing businesses, this is what we reap. Cancer spreads. Number 3. Then there are these subdivisions that foster the attitude that within their place of refuge, the standards of ancient craft masonry do not apply. Therein lies a situation that is more than alarming. It is downright vicious. Scarcely a jurisdiction in the United States is free of headaches brought on by some groups restricting its membership to Masons but considering itself exempt from Masonic standards. A few jurisdictions have met the issue head-on to the good of all Freemasonry. Others have looked in the other direction and thereby have damaged the entire fraternity. One of these days, Masonic leadership had better come to grips with the issue. The winking attitude, which says, in effect, quote, "It's none of our business as long as you're not wearing an apron," end quote, is unthinkingly dealing a body blow to our beloved craft. A serious-minded young friend of mine expressed interest in masonry until a past master gave him a lurid description of the antics and the carousals he enjoyed in his favorite appendant organization. That ended his interest. Mark it down. The public makes no distinction between the Master Mason who wears an apron and the Master Mason who wears some other kind of garb. I think you can probably read between the lines as to where he might be aiming his criticism, but without knowing exactly who Most Worshipful Brother Smith is referring to here, I will keep my inferences to myself. I think the underlying message is that your behavior matters. Remember this the next time when you're wearing your cap and the square and compass and double eagle shrine emblem insert symbol to represent X Masonic body in public. You are representing the craft. If you decide to go full Karen and you get video recorded doing it wearing the square and compasses on your apparel, then you only have yourself to blame when you end up on TikTok and the Grand Master or one of his subordinates reprimands you. Most Worshipful Brother Smith did not even have the idea of social media on his radar. As I and others have written extensively on the subject, I think the lesson to be taken from this is that you always represent Freemasonry, whether in public space or cyberspace, so govern yourselves accordingly. The best thing to do is to treat social media like you should be acting in the lodge and avoid discussion of divisive topics such as politics or religion. What you put on social media is not easily removable. Reaching peak anger in cyberspace isn't the best reflection of who you are or what you represent. The public does not know this. This is the only reflection they will see. Number 4. When the leadership of ancient craft masonry neglects the parent body to smile upon everything which claims a relationship to Freemasonry, however remote, that leadership is not contributing to a solution of our problem. It is only aggravating it. In a single year, not so long ago, 2 American Grand Masters actually visited more appendant bodies than symbolic lodges in their respective terms in office. From one end of America to the other, the Grand Masters are going up and down their jurisdictions like itinerant peddlers, promoting everything under the sun except plain, unadulterated, symbolic Freemasonry. They go to Washington to attend what used to be the Grand Masters Conference and find that it has become Masonic Week, with the side shows taking over. Truly the tail has begun to wag the dog, and we wonder what is wrong. Subdivided we stand, and subdivided I fear we shall fall. One does not have to be more than 40 to remember when the Super Patriots raged over the hyphenated American, declaring it was time to drop old world loyalties and become an American without a hyphen. Well, I am not advocating that hyphenated Masons eliminate anything that contributes to their understanding and appreciation of Freemasonry, but I am preaching a gospel of fundamentals. I am calling on our symbolic lodges to do a better job of upgrading themselves, and I am challenging the other Masonic organizations and appendant groups to put a stop to the downgrading of the symbolic lodge, to acknowledge by actions rather than words that the lodge is the fountainhead of all Freemasonry, to put first things first, to look under the rock whence they are hewn. I do not know if this is the case or not, but apparently Dwight was calling out some Grand Lodge officers that he felt cared more about appended bodies than their own blue lodges. I have to admit I did chuckle regarding his shot towards Masonic Week, given how it has become one of the main events in the world of American Freemasonry. At the end of the day, I think that we have seen through the Not Just a Man program that the Northern Masonic Jurisdiction and Southern Jurisdiction of the Ancient Accepted Scottish Rite, along with the Shriners, have sponsored, that they recognize their core membership must come from Blue Lodge Masonry. Talk to any Grand Secretary, and I believe that they will tell you that a majority of their membership inquiries are coming from this website. Dwight's challenge to the Blue Lodge rings true. How many men would seek out appended bodies if they were getting everything they need from their own Blue Lodge? I guess we may never know the answer to that question. I will tell you that you can't blame a man for going to another restaurant for pizza when all your lodge is serving him is ketchup on a saltine. If your Blue Lodge experiences is not fulfilling all of your members, then you only have yourselves to blame when members are not attending your meetings. In my next article, I'll explore the next question that Smith poses, which is question 6. Has the American passion for bigness and efficiency dulled the spirit of Masonic charity? Worshipful Brother Darren A. Lehners. What a great piece. I think his articulated skeleton, as it were, of breaking this thing apart and talking about the various sections, as usual, is on point. You know, point one, Masonic bodies and appendant organizations are actually competing for the time, attendance, interest, and substance devotion of Master Masons. You know, this might be really true in a lot of places here. I think we also have, in certain jurisdictions, they keep special calendars, and so that they go, hey, you know, we can't overlap our calendars, because they're trying to mitigate this thing that happens when two or more events are happening on the same day. But then, of course, you also run into the situation that, you know, you haven't been home in a week and a half because you go into all these meetings every night. It really is not doing anybody any favors. His second point, you know, the subdivisions have encouraged the mental attitude that when a Master Mason gains membership in another body, he then has outgrown Ancient Craft Lodge. This is huge, right? Although I see what happens sometimes, and there's been some great cases that I have witnessed, including a member whose initials are JPS, that's all I'll say. JPS, I had almost suspended for non-payment of dues many years ago. Met him in another lodge, and I was like, why aren't you in lodge? And he said, you know, I just joined, I went through, and I got involved in the shrine, that's really what I wanted to do. And I was like, how dare you? And then he said, but now my kids are out of school, and they're out of the house, and I'm here at this lodge tonight to help them with their degree work. And he delivered some of the best degree work I've ever seen. And so he has now reinvested himself in the Blue Lodge work, and I see him at the Scottish Rite now also, and he is maybe the best actor I have seen on stage. And he understands the teaching, so gosh, it feels like he went in reverse. He outgrew the shrine and went back to the Master Mason thing. You know, I'm not sure. It's an odd thing to think about. This third point, that there are these subdivisions that foster an attitude within their place of refuge that standards of Ancient Craft Masonry do not apply. I mean, this is obviously a shot towards Mirth, right? The Royal Order of Jesters and all of the goofy things that they've been accused of and even brought up on charges and criminal activity and drugs and underage people attending scandalous parties and even human trafficking. That's right. There's been all kinds of stuff if you care to Google it, but I won't get into it. But Brother Smith is absolutely on point here. When the public sees something like that, they associate it with Masonry. They don't care one lick if it's just a subsect of debaucherous, depraved Masonic individuals who probably should never have joined our fraternity. They just see that we're all skeezy, and that's unfortunate. Number four, when the leadership of ancient craft Masonry neglects the parent body to smile upon everything which claims a relationship to Masonry, however remote, that leadership is not contributing to a solution of our problem. It's only aggravating it. Totally agree here. Although I've not really seen this too much from any of the grandmasters that I know from Massachusetts or from Illinois or a couple of other, you know, grand lodges to which I belong, I do see it happen from time to time, and I do hear from brothers who say it's just so wrong that our Grand Master promotes these other things over our own craft. And something else that is interesting Darren brings up is that this idea to enable lodges to offer everything they can for Freemasonry, because we do offer everything, but if we don't promote this and actually do these things, then people go to other appendant bodies to do those things that we already have or teach within Freemasonry, if we so choose. This is kind of loosely the premise of one of the top-rated books by readers of Masonic books. The book is Andrew Hammer's Observing the Craft, I think is the title of it. Put a link to that in the show notes for you guys. But essentially, that there is no need to go outside of the Blue Lodge to get anything, because your Blue Lodge has the ability to do all of the things. And if they do them, then you'll be fulfilled and you won't feel like you need to join another appendant body. So that is interesting. But my question for you all this week is, when we consider the overall theme of this particular question, what can we expect when we have permitted Masonry to become subdivided into all these little parts? If you feel so inclined, agree or disagree, implementing a waiting period before a Mason is able to join another organization is a good idea. Agree or disagree? Darren says 5 years. I think he's just spitballing. However, what do you guys think? Should that be code? All right, let's get into this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother, Stephen L. Harrison.
Think back to that day when you became an entered apprentice. You had waited with patience, perhaps for months, perhaps not exactly so patient, for this big moment. You knew you had a long way to go in your journey, but you, the man they finally addressed as brother, were now a Freemason. You stood before the master of the lodge among your brothers, knowing you were a part of things. Accepted, perhaps you even had a small sense of accomplishment. Then, it all momentarily fell apart. You were asked for something you could not produce, and all of those warm, positive thoughts evaporated into a helpless, empty feeling. You were the new guy. You wanted nothing more than to please your new brothers. You saw an empty hand stretched out. You wanted to comply. You couldn't. Now what? Were they going to expel you for this? As your mind reeled, the master explained what this was all about. You just received, in a graphic way, one of your first Masonic lessons. Every Freemason, even if financially well off, has for at least one fleeting moment known the despair of not having enough. That little object lesson, sometimes called the rite of destitution, certainly cannot compare to the reality of a life of grinding poverty. But the hope is it will teach you, the new brother, that it is your duty, not your option, but your duty, to treat those in that condition fairly, to be able to empathize with them and, if at all possible, contribute to the relief of any such person so far as his necessities may require and your ability will permit. Freemasonry being, as we are instructed, a progressive science, this is not the end of your lesson in charity. Elsewhere in our Masonic journey, we learn relief is one of the great tenets of our craft. We in the United States and even the Western world are privileged in most cases to have the means to support ourselves and our families. But even here, there are those who cannot do so. So we, as Freemasons, do what we can, both as lodges and individuals. It is a never-ending task. Jesus himself admonished us that the poor will always be with you. So, undiscouraged, we remain aware that every little bit helps, and we never give up. Lodges, institutions, and persons of great means can and do make a significant difference with their contributions. The Shriners Hospitals, for example, have an immense impact on humanity with their charities and, with support, have the means to do it. We, as individuals and smaller lodges, do not operate on the same level, but the spirit of our contributions is no less significant. Most of our brothers are individuals who would be generous to those less fortunate anyway. But it does not hurt to have that right of destitution gnaw at us as a reminder that practicing the great tenet of relief is the duty of every Freemason. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right. Our thanks goes out to illustrious Brother Harrison for this excellent edition of the Masonic Minute. Oftentimes there's a history lesson and things, and in this one he brings it back to this philosophical lesson that every Mason has faced. This is the rite of destitution. Now, there are differences from jurisdiction to jurisdiction on how this is done, but I will say that it is a long-lasting and very important part of the ritual. And I think our officers, when done properly, really shakes the individual a little bit. And certainly, perhaps for somebody who might be in a persistent state of need, might feel like, oh no, this is another instance and something that I'm not going to be able to accomplish. And yet somebody who's more well-off might think, what should I do? It is a very important lesson, and I think we do well to always remember it. If you like this, then please head on over to our YouTube channel and subscribe, because Brother Harrison puts together videos for these as well. And these videos are part of a larger collection of over 160 Masonic Minutes that are inside of a playlist that you can queue up and play at your lodge or an event for your lodge, or maybe even if you're at a sort of trade show and you have a Masonic booth and these things are playing in the background. All really cool. And certainly they give the public, and maybe even our families, a little bit of better insight. And of course, they do the same for us. Now, illustrious Brother Harrison also has his 1 Minute Mason channel where these are also published. You can check that out. And please consider looking at the Missouri Lodge of Research, where I am a member, where Brother Steve is a member and a fellow, and has contributed years of service to them. And all of the links back to illustrious Brother Harrison's books, my personal favorites being Tales from the Craft and Freemasonry at Oak Island, are available for purchase, and you can get them from Amazon, but we've got them all linked, and I hope you guys check it out. Being a little bit of a shorter episode this week due to just some wild family stuff and beginning of the month, wrapping up prior month data and things like that for work. I did have to make this episode a little bit shorter, but I wanted to make sure that we continued the two really important things, which is to continue to look at whither are we traveling, and then also do a short contemplative piece based on a tarot card. Now, if you're just joining us for the first time ever and you're finding this, you're like, oh my gosh, what does tarot have to do with Freemasonry? The answer is nothing. Nothing. So don't take this as like Freemasonry is, you know, in league with tarot or vice versa, or one comes from the other or vice versa. None of that. I am just a really big fan of tarot, a practicer of tarot. And what I find really interesting is it's not a divinatory thing. I'm not using it to tell the future. I'm not using it to raise spirits or bring spirits to me or anything like that. That's not the purpose of tarot. I follow Paul Case's teachings on the tarot, who is also a brother and founded an organization, BODA, or Builders of the Adytum. And you can check them out too if you want. I'll put a link in the show notes. But in any case, what we really like to do is to grab a tarot deck and then pull a single card after shuffling and look at the prescribed meaning for that card. And it's usually something that we can contemplate as Masons and see, how can we improve ourselves using this question? Does it help us to reflect on a particular situation or something that we may be involved with currently? So this week, I would like to use, last week we used the Robin Wood Tarot. This week, let me just go over here and pick a random deck. All right, it wasn't a random deck, actually. I got up and I thought, you know, it's Women's History Month, and anybody who's been following us on TikTok, where we're doing some videos and things behind the scenes of the WCY podcast and tarot and things, we did a couple videos to look at a specific deck called Our Tarot, which is a guidebook and deck featuring notable women in history. So this was kind of cool. Figured I'd go ahead and just use this deck this week, and maybe even next week, and we'll use this deck to reflect on questions, and we'll even learn a little bit about some famous women in history. Kind of cool, kind of fun. Very fun, I think. Anyway, let's see what we have. This is a really great tarot set, by the way. It's done by Sarah Shipman, and she's got high degrees in art. Pretty genius. You can follow her, I think, at Our Tarot on Instagram and on Facebook and all of those things. Go ahead and take this deck out. The book she wrote to go along with this is worth the dollars you'll spend on the actual tarot deck itself. I would have paid double for this. It's really nice. So go ahead and shuffle. These are kind of like medium-sized. It's a little bit bigger than a poker deck, but smaller than those 4x2 or 4x3 cards. Cards are a little thicker, so I'm probably not going to shuffle them a bazillion times. Once or twice here. All right, I'm going to do a single card tarot draw. Let's see what we get. Ooh, all right. We got the Four of Swords upright, and it's attributed to Hilma A.F. Clint. Now, before we get into talking about what this card is, let's see who Hilma A.F. Clint is. Hilma A.F. Clint, it says, she lived from 1862 to 1944, and she's from Sweden. In the latter part of the 19th century, people all over Europe and in North America became increasingly fascinated with spiritualist movements and occult ideas. The Industrial Revolution, scientific advancement, and inventions like the phonograph and the telephone were rapidly changing everyday life, and people were attempting to reconcile centuries-old religious beliefs with newfound knowledge. As a student of the Royal Academy of Stockholm during that time, artist Hilma A.F. Clint was no exception, as she often participated in group seances attempting to communicate with spiritual entities or the dead. As art critic Ben Davies observes in his 2018 article for the website ArtNet, the emergence of 19th century spiritualist movement was created by, quote, people who believed in the authority of scientific knowledge, but still felt that the emergent modern world left a hole to be filled in terms of purpose or meaning, end quote. And so it goes on to describe Hilma A.F. Clint's intense interest in spiritualism sometime after 1880. So she is a very famous artist, and she passed away in 1944 at the age of 82. Her will revealed that her works, an estimated 1,300 non-figurative paintings and 125 sketchbooks and notebooks could not be exhibited for 20 years. Her art remained unknown to the world at large until 1988, when her work was presented at the Nordic Association for Art Historians Conference. I will put a picture of the card within the Craftsman Plus group as well, so you all can see this particular card and contemplate it as you think about the meaning that we're about to discuss. So for us, the Four of Swords is in the upright position, which is what we want. Not that I don't like the reverse positions, I still will discuss what those may mean, but I do think we have covered the Four of Swords in the past. I may be wrong. But in this sense, let's remember that this card is usually depicting somebody who is sleeping or laying down, three above and one underneath the person laying down. For me, this card is very simple. It means rest, so take a nap, relaxation, meditation, contemplate, recuperation. This card is so important, and maybe more so now than ever, because we are a society that is so on the go. This tells us that it's time to rest before we move on to some exciting challenge that's happening tomorrow. That maybe we have reached a mile marker where this is like the first major challenge, we've finished it, and it's time to recharge our batteries, as it were, before we move on to some next phase of whatever it might be. It also says that, hey, if we've been going through times that are particularly trying to you, breakups, trauma in your life, loss of a loved one, family problems, even things like financial things, maybe you've got bills piling up or whatever those might be, this card says, hey, stop what you're doing, take one step back, and try to regain your perspective. Take a mental health day. Then the next day, make steps to correct action. Make a list. Try to list out the steps you need to list out in order to achieve what you need to achieve to recenter yourself. The Four of Swords is this meditative or contemplative type of calling. It tells us that, and this is really important, most of us are so busy all the time. This says, stop. Stay quiet. Don't move. Now you need to clear your mind, get rid of what you know you might consider mental messes or stress. Meditate, really. People say they meditate, but very often we're not doing it. Even if it's 5 minutes with everything off and you go to a different room and you just close your eyes for 5 minutes, try to let thoughts come in and pass right out. Don't dwell on anything. Those moments are going to help you. It may mean, as I mentioned, to find a small room, right? Maybe you need some seclusion. You need some solitude to really take a minute and think about any situations that are affecting you. But in any case, overall, this card says, think about what's happening in your life. Stop everything and think about it. Smell the roses, put your ducks in a row. This is a time to reassess priorities. Maybe things stay the same, maybe they don't. But it's time to pause and reflect. And, you know, for me, this card comes along. You know, this is a personal story, but recently my wife sat down at the table and she was very busy all day. She was off of work this particular day and she's like, I have so much to do and I'm off for the next 3 days. And I said, well, that's great. She says, but I have so much to do. I don't know where to start. And I said, well, you know, and I had my tarot deck and I pulled a single card and it was the Four of Swords, you guys. I said, well, that's what you need to do. And she said, what is that? I said, it's time to take a nap. And so she took a nap. And that's all it might mean sometimes, right? Like, take a nap, take some you time. And so for our brothers out there who are so busy, this is OV time. Man, we are going from official visit to official visit. And sometimes, you know, there's this thing that we all want to travel from lodge to lodge and go to all the official visits. Or if it's like Illinois here, where we just prep for our own OVs and we don't really travel around to go to other lodge OVs and all that. We're busy. Take time. Take your nap. I am always heavily criticizing Masons who only do the Masonic work for their lodge the day of their meetings. So for the interim 29 to 30 days in between meetings, they're not doing anything. They're not writing the minutes. They're not talking to their lodge members or anything. And so I'm not talking about those guys. Those guys already take enough time off. Those guys live in the Four of Swords, okay? Or maybe they live in something else, maybe a different card. Those guys need the Tower card right now. What I want to say is for our workers, our 3%ers, our 1%ers, who do all the stuff all the time, take a minute, guys, and refocus and take a rest. For a Craftsman Plus, I'd like to know a time where you just felt at your wit's end and what you did to overcome it. I'll be more than happy to share my story as well, and I look forward to reading yours. That's it for this week. I want to thank you all for joining us in this edifying episode of the Whence Came You podcast. I want to thank our producers, fellows, and contributors, and our legacy partners for helping bring this program to all of us and allowing me to bring this show to you every single week of the year, except 2 weeks a year, for the last almost 11 years. And if you want to learn more about how you can assist, head on over to our website, wcypodcast.com, click on support the show, or shop, or whatever else, and you can figure out any number of ways to assist us. But I thanks in advance, even if you're just out there sharing the show with your brothers and your friends. This is awesome of you. Thank you guys so much. I will, of course, put a link to the Our Tarot deck in the show notes also if you are so inclined to check that out. That's it. We'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level for Whence Came You. I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.